Very good morning, everyone. Thursday, October 6, Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you wherever and however you are listening. The Pupsters back on board, and the Aussies last night against the West Indies in that T20. Well, the Windies posted 9 for 145 on the Gold Coast. The Aussies chased them down with a ball to spare, winning by 3 wickets, and it was Aaron Finch in the runs, although he batted at 4. And made 58 off 53 balls. He and Matthew Wade got us out of a hole, really, with a partnership there for the 6th wicket, which saw us home. They put on 69 for the 6th wicket as we just got over the Windies there on the Gold Coast. Morning to you, pup.
Morning, boys. Morning to our listeners. Apologies for being off yesterday. Nice to be back. Nice to see the Aussies get a win. And most importantly, Finchie make some runs. Big change. Him batting at number 4, not opening the batting, and Steve Smith not playing. So a couple of interesting selections just leading into this World Cup. A couple of guys, David and Green, both in the 11 for this game against the West Indies, but both not in the World Cup squad. So I'm a little unsure, I guess, Mido, what the selectors and what Finchie as the captain's thinking. Steve Smith's in the World Cup squad, but he's not playing. He's not in the 11 last night. He's a little strange for me. So, yeah, who knows? But, yeah, is this going to be the spot that Finchie bats in now? Does he bat at number 4 in the World Cup? Or is this about making a change, get some confidence, get some runs behind you, and then go back to the top of the order? But either way, good win for Australia.
Loz, morning to you.
Yeah, morning, boys. Hope Clarkie's doing okay. Yeah, some surprises there last night with the cricket. I know they won, but they still needed 11 runs off the last over, and the West Indies had a couple of drop catches. So we could be talking about Australia losing, and then you can only imagine what the ramifications of that would have been. But good to see Aaron Finch score some runs, 58. A bit like Pup, I'm unsure of whether that's where he's going to bat in the World Cup or not. But I, for the life of me, I can't work out, unless they had injuries, why Cameron Green would be playing.
Yeah, and Tim David, because they're both not in the World Cup squad.
I just can't believe that you wouldn't be playing people that are going to be part of that squad. Give them some game.
David is in the World Cup squad, isn't he?
Is he in the 15?
Pretty sure he is. I'll check that one for you, Clark.
Yeah, I didn't think he was in the 15. If he was in the 15, then he should be playing every game to get some confidence leading into the World Cup. I saw him and Maxi missed out. Both got no runs. I tell you, the one who has been on fire is Wadey. Matthew Wade since the last World Cup. You remember, I think it might have been the quarter final against Pakistan and played an unbelievable innings in the UAE and got the Aussies home. Since then, he's been a bit of a saviour for this Australian middle order.
He's a fighter, isn't he? Because
he's tough, man.
When his place has been under question, which is difficult to do, he comes out and scores. And then consistently keeps scoring.
He wants to play all three formats, and he hasn't been a part of... Alex Carey's been the one-day keeper. Obviously, Tim Payne was the test keeper as well. And Wadey wanted to be a part of both those formats. But in the T20 stuff, he's been extremely consistent in a role, batting in that lower middle order. Man, it's so up and down. You've got to walk out first ball and try and hit a boundary. But he's found his place, and I think he's going to be really important for this World Cup. Did you see Amido? Is David in the 15?
Yeah, he's in the 15.
Okay. Then I think he has to play. I think it's just working out. It just seems...
But he played instead of Smith, and Cameron Green, who's not in the 15, that, did play.
That's my point. I don't know what they're doing with Smitty. Like, I feel like, again, they probably had to make a decision when selecting the World Cup if Smitty was going to be the number 3. Because I think that's his ideal position. And to me, if he's in there, he should be playing this game.
They're playing it down, but I've got a feeling Stoinis may not come up and that Green will end up in that squad. Well, when you look at that team selection last night, that indicates that they're wargaming for that.
Yeah, well, there's obviously got to be concerns there, but I think they're giving them every opportunity. Marsh didn't play, did he?
Yes, he did. He batted at 3.
He batted at 3. So that's what they're doing.
He didn't bowl.
They got him and Stoinis that are obviously under injury concerns. But, yeah, if they're selecting Green in front of Smith in the 11, you probably think one of them, or probably, like you say, Stoinis, is extremely unlikely to come up.
Mm. Well, they're saying that Stoinis will be back for the three England games coming up. So we've got one more game against the Windies, then three against England heading into the World Cup. What? It's only a couple of weeks away, isn't it?
I think it starts 13th.
16th, I think.
Yeah, he's the first. But Australia don't play...
Yeah, maybe
Australia play New Zealand.
Maybe that's on the 16th.
Yeah, that's the Aussies' first game. At the SCG, I think.
Relief for Dragons fans, Ben Hunt has re-signed for a further two seasons, so that takes him to the end of 2025. The 32-year-old locking away that contract before he obviously heads to the UK with the Kangaroos. They're leaving today, aren't they, Loz? And the fallout from this will be Jaden Sullivan and whether he now absolutely looks to get out of the Dragons. But in the short term for the Dragons, Ben Hunt, they just needed to keep.
Oh, it was a must sign, wasn't it? No, I didn't think Ben Hunt would leave, but when, you know, negotiations are going on, you're unsure of what the outcome will be. But Ben Hunt, he's been their best player. He's extended his contract, and I reckon a lot of Dragons fans, most Dragons fans, would be happy with the fact that he has done that. Very professional player, Ben Hunt. He's improved with age. And I think the fact that he has been a star for Queensland the last couple of Origin series has really helped him grow as a leader on the field for the Dragons. And his performance has been exceptional. They could ill afford to lose him. They've re-signed him. And that's good news when it comes to recruiting other players as well. But Bud Sullivan, he's a kid with a lot of talent, and I'm hoping that the Dragons will re-sign him. He's from down that way. He'll be picked up by another club. He's a wonderful, exciting player, can play in the halves. They played him as a bit of a hooker, the Dragons. So I'm unsure if clubs will look at him as a nine or they'll just revert him back and play him as a seven or a six. But he's certainly very talented and very dangerous with the football. And the more first-grade footy that he plays, the better he'll be.
Yeah, the interesting thing with Sullivan is he is contracted at the Dragons until 2025. Mm. So he's going to get itchy feet.
Well, it's like Tyrell Sloan. Yeah, they've got these young kids on contract. And, you know, I can understand Anthony Griffin not rushing them as well, but eventually they want to play first grade and they'll get their opportunity playing first grade at other clubs if it's not happening at the Dragons. And, you know, like everyone, if you think you're good enough and you're not getting an opportunity, you want to move on. You want to go somewhere that you think you can get first grade football. So I can understand that.
The Dolphins signed someone with attacking flair as well. So Shano's going to be happy. Hemiso, Tabuai Fadou, heading to the Dolphins on a two-year deal from November. So that means he's released from the final year of his Cowboys deal and he's set to play fullback. So they needed some strike. They'd signed some, you know, I guess some veteran forwards.
Yeah. But he's a good player, Hemiso. He's got plenty of speed. He'll be dangerous through the middle of the ruck, in particular pushing up in support. He was identified as their number one choice as fullback last season, and then he got injured, I think, and Drinkwater came in and played the house down, and then Hemiso just couldn't get back in the team. Drinkwater did an outstanding job, different type of players, but he'll be a very, very good pickup for the Dolphins.
And on the Kangaroos leaving today, back page of the telly is, the headline is Snub leaves sour taste in DCE's mouth, and this is in regards to the captaincy, but he goes on to say he totally understands why he wasn't given the captaincy, as much as he would have loved the accolade to Captain Australia on the Kangaroos tour. He understands that he's fighting for a position. So naturally, James Tedesco will be in the number one jersey for Australia. So understands why Teddy was given the captaincy. But he was also asked yesterday whether it is sort of going to compare as well, Loz, to the battles between Langer and your old teammate Ricky Stewart back in the 90s in particular when they were fighting for that number seven jersey in the Australian team all the time, weren't they?
Yeah, and Steve Mortimer and Peter Sterling. You know, it goes on. You know, there's always good competition when you go away on a Kangaroo tour, and that's one of the reasons why Mal decided that, you know, Cherry Evans wasn't going to be captain, was he just couldn't assure him a spot in the 17. But he'll go away. He'll get football over there daily. He can play in other positions as well. And Mal has told the players that he'll give them all an opportunity, and then their sort of focus is the quarterfinal. And the quarterfinal is when you'll see Australia put out their best team, or what Mal thinks is the best team, will be in that quarterfinal. But up until then, he'll chop and change this team. He'll give players their preference to play in certain positions. He'll try and work out the best combinations, and then you'll see the best team that Mal thinks is he can put out in the field in that quarterfinal. But it's exciting that they're going away today. A lot of these players have never been on a kangaroo tour before. They'll create wonderful memories. It's a 7-week tour if they make the final. It's going to be a difficult World Cup for them because the other nations have improved out of sight, in particular the Pacific nations, the Tongas, the Samoas. So it's exciting. I'm really looking forward to the World Cup because I think it'll toss up some upsets. And you look at the Kiwi side. It's a good side.
Great side.
Got some forwards.
Gee, it's going to fill the void for us, isn't it, in the next few weeks? Oh. We've got it racing, but to have this World Cup, it's going to be one of the better World Cups. Just thinking, in your career, Lozzie obviously went away on Kangaroos tours, but you played in that era when it was sort of the World Cup was sort of decided over, I don't know, a four-year period.
I missed actually a couple of World Cups. There was one in 92 I missed because of knee.
That's just the one-out final, though, wasn't it? You didn't have the tournament as such? It was sort of...
No, it was a tournament.
Oh, it was a tournament.
Yeah, it was a tournament.
Yeah.
And then I missed another one during Super League.
Yeah.
So I missed two World Cups. Would have loved to have gone on a World Cup tour. But to go on a kangaroo tour was very special. I think my first one, we left... So in 1990, we left a couple of days after the grand final. We got back 2 weeks before Christmas.
Long trip.
It's a long trip, yeah. But we had a wonderful time. I turned 21 on that tour. What are you laughing at?
Oh, I could just, like, thank goodness there was no social media. There was no, mobiles. And, you would have had a ball. Would have had a ball.
Time of your life.
Absolutely. Also back page of the telly, just on Cherry Evans' situation at his club. So Dez's Day is the headline here. Manly owner flying in to decide Hasler's fate. Where will this all land with Manly? It's going to be one of the stories of the off-season, no doubt. A board meeting is imminent, according to this article via the News Corp Press, saying that Hasler may agree to a succession plan, which sees Sharks assistant Josh Hennay, who we've spoken to on the show numerous times.
Very impressive.
So it sees Josh Hennay take over, though some at Manly, according to this article, favour other potential candidates. Apparently, the club and coach are communicating now through lawyers, although the article goes on to say that people at Manly have denied that, but it indicates a significant breakdown there between Dez Hasler and his people and the club. Daily Cherry Evans yesterday didn't want to elaborate on the situation. He reiterated he has a great relationship with Dez Hasler. Oh, boy. Well, I'll just throw it out. Will Dez Hasler be coaching Manly based on everything we're seeing and hearing come round one next season?
I think next season, yes.
They'll find a way.
I think he'll coach next season. After that, I'm unsure.
Mm.
After that, I'm unsure. And look, they want a succession plan. And they want Dez to show them what the best way forward for Manly is. So Dez has had strong success there at Manly. They didn't have the success this year. There's a number of good candidates out there. Look, Josh Hennay, again, I don't know Josh. I don't know him. Know him to say g'day to. But I'll tell you what, every time he has come on our program, you cannot be more impressed. And you speak to guys in and around that Queensland setup. He had such an influence over that team with Billy Slater this year. And all the Sharkies players, they speak so highly of Josh Hennay. So he's building a nice resume for himself. Shane Flanagan, premiership winning coach, he's been mentioned. He's certainly got a lot of support. Anthony Seibold's been mentioned. And Seibs, I think he deserves another opportunity. He was coach of the year, went up there to the Broncos, made the finals the first year, and then it went pear-shaped. spending some time with Eddie Jones in another code. I don't think that would affect him at all. Very knowledgeable, extremely thought of as a coach. So there's some options out there. But I think if you ask me whether Dez is going to coach next year, I would say yes, well into the future. I don't think so.
What do you reckon, Pup? Do you reckon they'll come to an arrangement that Desi will be still there at the start of next season? Because I don't know how keen he is on this succession plan, but we know that he likes to do it his way. Simple as that.
I think he will. I think he'd be gone by now. There's been enough, and again, I'm going to go on what I'm reading in the papers and hearing as well. I think there's been enough chaos that if they wanted to get rid of him, he'd be gone by now, and they'd probably have a plan B, another coach already on the hit list that they would want. But I don't think they've got that. I think they're just obviously, they want different things, and that's part of any negotiation. So I think that's probably the situation now. Desi's got to find a way to probably give a little bit, and the club's probably got to do the same. But, yeah, I think from Manly's point of view, certainly the current players, I think it would be less of a distraction going into next season if Desi stayed, because that gives them time to try and source their plan B once he walks away or gets sacked or whatever it is. But yeah, I think he'll be coaching next year.
Just back page of the Australian. Now, this isn't obviously a huge story in New South Wales, but it's an interesting one going forward for appointments in administration. I mentioned yesterday the situation at Essendon, and on the back page of the Australian is loss of face over faith, ex-CEO. And this is in relation to the Essendon, well, the new chief executive, Andrew Thorburn, who lasted one day in the job. But I said yesterday that he delivered a sermon back in 2013. He actually didn't, sorry. It was a pastor from the church, and he's just been chairman of that particular church, a Christian church in Melbourne, since 2014. But he's been basically stood down from his job as chief executive after, well, it was published that the pastor, well, the views of the church against, you know, abortion, homosexuality, etc., the views of that particular pastor were published. And he is stood down accordingly the following day. So it's just going to be, this story is obviously huge in Melbourne and Victoria, but we talk about due diligence, but when remarks that you don't even make are held against you due to an association that you have, gee, what's this going to mean for appointments going forward, Loz, and how deep you have to go into people's associations, etc.? It's going to be, yeah, wow. It could open up a huge can of worms.
I think it already has with the decision to backflip on their decision. But again, if you're, you know, getting someone for a CEO role, you should know most things about him, I would assume, coming into a big organisation like Essendon.
But he didn't even make those views.
No, I get that. But they still understood what the church is about and stood for. Hmm. And then they would have to weigh up, you know, there'd be a lot of people that would disagree with the thoughts of that church. And if they were solid, they would say, well, yeah, we understand that, but this is the best candidate. We think that he can separate those values in a line with our club and what we're all about. And then when they started to get a bit of a backlash, that's when they decided to backflip on their decision.
It's interesting though, isn't it?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
What if you're CEO of a company and one of your employees goes and bashes someone? Are you accountable for that as CEO?
Well, that's
because he works for your business?
I was just thinking, I grew up a Catholic. Like, I would sit there when I used to go to church, obviously once a week, the way I was brought up. And, you know, be sitting there listening to the sermon from the priest. You think, oh, this is rubbish.
But this is the problem that I have. It's a bit like the Tim Payne issue.
Mm.
Whereas they looked at it, they were comfortable with the decision they made at the time. So they went, bang, yes. Then they start to get a bit of blowback and they get a bit of heat put on them. And then they walk away from the original decision that they've made.
Mm. I just think that,
like, for me, once you've made that decision, and it's a difficult path to go down in terms of separation, being head of the church and being head of the football club, you haven't said the words but you're associated with that club. Where does it leave you? But I'm sure they would have had to have known that, you know, that's what he was involved in.
Yeah.
Like, how do you not, if you say you've done a thorough process? Because it's taken him one day to find out that he's been chairman of this church.
Where a different pastor made the remarks, which is that pastor's remarks, not necessarily his.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I'm saying that.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, why did they make the decision to give him the job, but then once the blowback happened,
yeah, pull back.
Then they went, ooh, this is too hot. If they're saying that they've done a thorough process and all their due diligence on getting the right person, and then it's taken one day for someone to find out that he's the head of this church. Mate, that sounds like they've already had him in mind and they just appointed him.